time now for Tuesdays with Neil. We welcome in the outstanding Neil Coulonge. Sir, always a pleasure.
And always the pleasure is mine. Thanks for having me.
Okay, America's Great Mystery Team moves on as they continue the third and final game of this homestand, and they've got Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers. It's a team that defies explanation in many ways, but let's start with this part. What does Johnson mean to the offense when he is a part of the mix to help out Kenny Pickett?
Johnson overall is their best receiver. It's not even particularly close. I mean, that's probably the biggest understatement you'll hear. When I say that, I don't mean, you know, highlight reel, YouTubeable catches on the sideline. I mean actually playing the position. As far as his route running, his balance, hands have been a question with him overall. But you're looking at a tactician of getting open. Very few receivers, if any, are able to earn as much separation in the mid-range as Deontay Johnson is. And that's critically important for an offense that isn't attacking down the field successfully all that often and needs a guy to make up for something of a lack of a running game, which we've seen often throughout the year. In fact, I'd say it's pretty remarkable that they had any offensive success in the time that Johnson was out. But Johnson coming back and the offense getting used to him, kind of building up together is only going to make them stronger. And he's a player they absolutely need to step up and be a 13, 14 target guy and make the most out of every opportunity that he gets. It's not going to be great. We've seen a quarterback that hasn't been consistently accurate. I'm not suggesting he's going to be a 150-yard a game guy, but when they need plays made in the passing game, it's probably going to be Johnson getting the target, and he's going to have to step up and make the most out of that.
Amazing in all of this, sometimes you will see teams that play great defense, and the Steelers do, they play great defense, and they at least have a running game to back it up, maybe eat a little bit of clock, and so forth. This team averages 3.7 yards a carry, Neil. 3.7. How much of it is the running backs, and how much of it is initial contact being right around the line of scrimmage?
It's both. And I think most people answer this question based on which unit they like more, which tends to be the running back. So you constantly blame the offensive line. Just bottom line, you're not talking about the 1984 Redskins running game here. You know, this is not a high-level offense in any way, shape, or form. The running backs pretty consistently miss holes that they have. They're not making the most out of the opportunities that they're getting. And the offensive line does not consistently produce at least a stalemate at the line of scrimmage, let alone winning the line of scrimmage and pushing it back and giving the running back an opportunity to accelerate and find a spot to run. Both of these things are failing pretty consistently. And most importantly, it's failing throughout multiple schemes. They're not a great inside zone running team, which is what kind of picked them up last year and helped them, you know, accelerate to that, you know, kind of probably mediocre level that they achieved by the end of last season. They're not running gap particularly well. They're not running combos well at all. There are a lot of things that are going wrong throughout all phases of it. And keep in mind, too, when we talk about run blocking, it is not just on your offensive line. Tight ends as well. I think that has been maybe the biggest issue. They're not getting very good play out of their tight ends at all. That's probably because the veteran, the guy that was probably not going to come off the field ever, Pat Freiermuth, has been out. And he got hurt early in week one. I don't think he's played more than 10 snaps this year healthy. No. So that's hurting them in terms of outside zone stretch. They're not able to run those concepts due to the lack of experience they have blocking up front. Connor Hayward is not a physically imposing tight end. He's going to have a tougher time in line blocking to the strength. Jordan, I don't know why I keep doing that. Darnell Washington is having he's having some moments, but he's a young blocker. He's going to get better. He's going to improve over time, but he's going to take some lumps while he's out there. You're seeing that snap to snap right now. I don't even remember the third one's name. Rodney Williams, is that a guy that they're bringing up for practice squad duty? from the practice squad for special teams duties, he's getting in on offensive snaps now. I think that's how shallow it seems their tight ends have been producing for the offense overall. These are tough things to overcome as an entire running game. We've seen flashes of it. There have been times they've put stuff together and looked pretty good. I think it's the arrow is pointed up if they wish to keep Broderick Jones on the right side, have Dan Moore, who's, I thought, played pretty well since he's gotten injured. That's a positive boost for them. I think Jones played really well, I thought, at mm-hmm. right tackle, considering the circumstance. The arrow is definitely on the rise, and it's something in which they can use to get better as the season goes on. But if they're going to go from 3.7 to, 4.2 between now and the end of the season, a lot of things are going to need to change. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to do that.
Yet you have a place kicker in Chris Boswell who is 14 for 14 under 60 yards. I didn't say under 50. I didn't say under 40. He's 14 of 14 under 60 yards. What does that at least do to the decision-making process for Mike Tomlin as to how he plays this chess game with this team?
Well, I think Tomlin showed they got backed up 5 yards and he had Boswell kick. I think it was 60 at Hines, and understandably he missed by a few. This is the Boswell we've gotten to know. I think at this point, most teams can probably say the best kicker in franchise history is playing for them or played for them within the last 5-7 years. But Boswell has earned that distinction through the consistency at home. And when you see a three-game stretch at home, oftentimes, I mean, this is what I think, NFL teams enjoy comfort. The longer that they stay stationary, they have their exact routine down, they're comfortable, the better they're going to look versus their opponent that's traveling in from out of town. They're lacking that type of routine. You expect them to get better, but then you're looking at your kicker. It's maybe the hardest stadium in the NFL to kick in. It's consistently on those lines. We see opponents missing kicks in Heinz Field all the time, unless his name's Justin Tucker. Boswell is still consistent even at Heinz Field. I think that's a pretty remarkable accomplishment in comparison to his peers. Tomlin is not afraid to have Boswell attempt something in which he's probably barely clear the crossbar. In other words, he's not afraid to put him out there at 57. I'm not sure if that's, whatever cliche you want to use. He has faith in his defense. He has faith in the kicker. It's a bomb, whatever it is. And he's not afraid to do it. And for a team that is probably going to have to kick a lot of field goals, make a lot of field goals to be competitive in a lot of their games, I think the one thing Tomlin can say, there's a better chance of this going our way than most other things that we could do right now. So in that, he should have confidence in Boswell. Boswell's earned that. As the weather gets worse, you hope that it continues, and Boswell's shown that he can still do that despite the conditions. But it'd be a lot better if they could just, convert 4th and 5, 4th and 6 a little bit more consistently, or had a prayer of even doing that in an even situation. If they're 4th or 35 and it's 4th and 3, if it was a situation in which they felt confident that they could get those 3 yards and they went for it and converted that, I think they'd be better off. But having the kicker that can hit for 52-plus on a bad field in a tough-kicking stadium is definitely a huge advantage.
T.J. Watt has 22 tackles this season. 9.5 of them are sacks. What do you think of when you hear that number and then also match it up with the visual?
It's funny that you asked that. I was thinking that during the Titans game. You really didn't hear from him or see him, and a large part of that was they didn't run at him at all. Whether or not he's clear enough and the running back is slow enough to the hole for Watt to be able to get down the entire line and make a play, that's something else. But they're not even trying to challenge him in a lot of cases. We saw a lot of the same sort of obstacle course blocking teams have done against him. They're challenging him with the tackle up front. They're putting somebody right behind the tackle to chip him whenever he comes off of the tackle. That's slowing him down a bit. That's making him work even harder than he normally works. And I think that's limited his production a little bit. But the impact that he makes is always going to be beyond the basic scorebook. If you look at hurries, if you look at pressures, you see a little bit more clearly the impact that Watt can make. But at some point, and I think we're in this now, teams are just going to flat out stay away from him, just simply because what's the point? I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. The amount of big plays he makes, especially late in games, is unparalleled. You just don't see that. The edge rusher taking over a fourth quarter, much like a Steelers quarterback, except he plays the three quarters before that too. It's for a defensive player to be able to do that. You don't see it anywhere else. But now it's like, you know what? Just never mind. Forget it. You want to have that side? That's fine. We can play toe to toe with this team because they don't have any offense at all. At some point, we can break through. I don't feel confident that, even if Kenny Pickett has done this a few times, I don't feel fully confident over a second half they're going to have more opportunities than we are. Stay away from Watt. Don't let him make plays on the ball down the field. Don't let him make plays on the ball in the backfield. Just do what you can to not have the ball near him. It seems like that strategy is building. We'll see what Green Bay does with him. Different team, obviously, than Tennessee. But overall, it's probably a reasonable strategy, all things considered, especially if Minka Fitzpatrick's not on the field. Just try to limit their defensive playmakers as much as you can, and your offense is eventually going to break through. Pittsburgh's offense, though, another story. You're probably going to get more opportunities in the game than they will.
A few years ago, Green Bay drafted Jordan Love, number one, out of Utah State with the idea he would be in this position today. He's there now. When you have had the moments to observe Green Bay, what have you thought about him as a starting quarterback?
Mediocre. There's some nice physical tools to him. I think he's a really nice athlete.
Yeah.
He's had a lot of time to learn, to absorb. And you get into this kind of chicken versus the egg argument of should he sit or should he play, should he get the experience. He's had plenty of time in the rooms. You know, he's learned. It doesn't seem to reflect as well on the field. He got off to a nice start. You thought you saw some good things from him right away. It seems like teams got that film and studied it and broke it down. He hasn't been able to counterpunch to that yet. That's a problem. Offensively, that's a problem. I don't know whether it's entirely on your quarterback versus your offense in general. It's not a good offensive team. I don't think anybody expected it to be. They're going to struggle, but he's not making them any better either. He's really kind of down at the same level as the rest of them. You know, if he goes off for 350 and four touchdowns, I'm sure I'll say something different. But I don't think he's capable of doing that right now against a good defense in the NFL. It seems to me mental mistakes. I don't think it's so much of a physical concern. He's got a nice arm. He's got really nice feet. The ball doesn't seem to go often where he wants it to go. He's not particularly accurate. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the knock on him coming out of college. You know, there's some fundamental mechanical issues that he has. I don't see that those have really been fixed. He's had plenty of time to work on that. So if he's at his ceiling, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know how much better he'd be able to get. And you're seeing the results week in and week out. It's not particularly good.
Okay, so I'll give you a funny story. They play on Thursday night against Detroit. As you know, Detroit really won the game handily. And Sean Clifford is sitting on the bench. And they start chanting. And Sean is the one, he told Jack Ham and me the story, because Penn State played at Northwestern on that Saturday, so he came down from Green Bay to see his brother Liam play. And he says, I'm sitting on the bench, and they're chanting, "We want Clifford, we want Clifford." He said, I started to smile. He said, then I realized all those times that in Beaver Stadium they were chanting, "We want Levis, we want Aller." He says, and at that point I told Jordan, "Hey, you're okay, don't worry about it."
Nice to be on the other side of that for once. The backup quarterback's the most popular guy in town. You know, yeah. If you're not hearing it, it means you're not starting. So
yeah.
It'd be interesting if they would make a move. I don't, you know, this season, I don't think there's much they can do. But in the off season, I wouldn't be surprised if they went looking.
Yeah,
he's just not there. And there's been a lot of time that he's got. I get that he doesn't have a whole lot of games. But, again, the people that – the same people that will say, well, he hasn't played enough yet are the ones that said, he's okay, he's learning, he's going to be good when he comes in because he has all this experience. All this validates is that there was a reason they let Aaron Rodgers hold him hostage for as long as they did.
Yeah.
Not just that it's Aaron Rodgers. It's that they knew Jordan Love isn't worth it. But it, at the end of the day, if you really want to go back to this, it's not the fairest comparison, but they didn't put up a whole lot of resistance for Favre leaving town because they knew what they had in Rodgers. Right. If they knew that they had something in Love, a lot of the Aaron Rodgers stuff wouldn't have happened, okay? It's as simple as that. You want to move on to the less expensive younger guy as quickly as possible. It doesn't matter who they are. That's the economic reality of the NFL. Jordan Love, though, is not the guy that you want starting for your team next year the way that it looks today. Give him a chance. You know, he's probably going to start for the rest of the season, barring injury, and no one's rooting for that. But I don't think that's a long-term solution there. They're going to need to figure something out, and their record might put them in line to be able to make a move there. Depth issues on that team, cap issues on that team, they're in trouble. It might take them a couple of years to get out of this.
Well, I just feel like at this particular time, you know, the Steelers beat Tennessee on the Thursday night, had extra time. Green Bay, to me, is the perfect team to come in and play them right now.
Yeah, oddly enough, I was talking to a guy in town here. I know he's a big Packers fan. I was joking with him. We're enemies this week. And he kind of looked at me like, what are you talking about? Like, Steelers-Packers on Sunday. Oh, yeah. He completely checked out. Doesn't care at all. He's like a diehard Packers fan. Yeah. Maybe some of that's the clocks changing and the overall wonderful vibe you get in Minnesota in November. But it's really hard to go on the road and win a game right now. They're really not a very good team. And where Pittsburgh is, this is one of those games that just miraculously pop up on their schedule at the perfect time. They really need to put this together. They don't have a terrible schedule, but it's really hot and cold. And if they win the games they should win for the rest of the year, and there are some clunkers on there, including Green Bay, Indianapolis, if they win the rest of the way, I think they're 10-7. And that's assuming that they lose twice to Cincinnati, again to Baltimore, once to Baltimore, and then once to Cleveland, and whoever it may be. I guess New England is a clunker now as well. But for them to, they very well could finish like 100 minus 100 in point differential and win 10 games.
Right.
And Green Bay fits that narrative so perfectly well because it's like you don't get blown out by anybody except for week one. But you lose enough, and you're so underwhelming in your victories. Like, how did this even happen? It's the ultimate Mike Tomlin team now, you know, with the amount of times that he spends talking about style points and how that doesn't matter. The winning is the only thing that matters. Like, that is the reality for the Steelers.
Yeah, that's right.
It really doesn't make a difference how they do it. The only thing this team does well consistently is win games, and how that happens is beyond me.
I'm taken aback by it. I mean, the game, every game that they play, and it's over, I sit back and say, how the heck did that happen? I rarely have seen anything like this.
It's really an every week thing. I was joking, and I remember talking about this back in, this is December of 21, when they beat Tennessee in Pittsburgh, which... at the time, I said this is perhaps the dumbest Steelers win I've ever seen.
Yeah,
they had no business winning that game. I'd probably put five of them since then on that level. Pretty close.
Yeah.
Two of them this year. The fact that it continues to happen, it's become their signature. And I've never seen a team like this in the NFL. It doesn't make any sense. But... It just kind of seems like all the cliches are, you know, figuratively true. They cut the eyelids off. They're not blinking. They're not afraid of, you know, whatever the situation is. It's just the reality is they find a way to drag a team down into the muck with them, and they could win down there. For the team to avoid the huge mistakes that the defense will force upon them in the second half, to make all of their field goals, to run the ball consistently, to catch everything that's thrown their way. I know that sounds like basic football, but those things just stop happening against the Steelers from their opponents, particularly when they're playing at home nowadays. Ask Baltimore. You know, I was joking around this week that John Harbaugh wakes up in the middle of the night with phantom Kenny Pickett flying over his head in cold sweats, wondering all the games that they lost because of really just no reason. They've lost, what, five or six to the Steelers, I think, now?
Yeah.
And they should have won every one of those games.
Yeah, no.
Just, it's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. And I've been saying for at least a year and a half, the other shoe's going to fall eventually, but it hasn't. And I can keep saying it. Eventually, I'm going to be right. But, the joke's on me ultimately, because this team has grossly overachieved since Ben's elbow snapped back in 2019. They've been a bad offensive team that's gotten opportunistic defensive efforts in more games than not. And somehow that's compiled, nine, 10-win seasons for them. It's beyond me to explain how it's going to continue. I just feel like it will.
Always a pleasure, even when we're not quite sure.
Absolutely. We'll talk about the next crazy win next week.
Thanks, Neil. Neil Coulong.